Hello and welcome. What is the cost to civil liberties as nations around the world boost their fight against extremism? A spate of attempted bombings in Europe has prompted many governments to consider tougher security measures. France is tightening up checks after authorities there arrested two men suspected of planning an attack. That incident came a few days after Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden threatened violence against France over its military presence in Afghanistan. Greece is in a heightened state of alert after the police foiled a plot, allegedly by left-wing anarchists, to send mail bombs to embassies in Athens. Also last month, two explosive packages were intercepted at airports in Britain and the United Arab Emirates. Investigators say the bombs originated from Yemen and were addressed to synagogues in Chicago. And that's led the US to immediately implement stricter safety rules across its airports. So on today's show, we ask, are the very laws designed to protect our freedoms actually infringing on our basic rights? Well, you can join the conversation by sending us an SMS or an email to the show. Well, joining me now is former CIA officer Robert Baer, who had an extensive career handling operations in the Middle East. He's now a respected commentator and journalist covering issues related to US security and foreign policy. And Amitava Kumar, who has researched how our civil liberties are being eroded by the fight against extremism. He's the author of the book, A Foreigner Carrying in the Crook of His Arm a Tiny Bomb, a writer's report on the war on terror. Both my guests are in New York. Gentlemen, I welcome you both to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Baer, I want to start with you and ask you, is the world actually any safer because of the so-called war on terror? I mean, or has the actual effort to tackle terrorism made the situation worse?
Oh, I think it's made it worse. You know, you look at Afghanistan, you know, before 9/11, we weren't at war with the Taliban, and now we are. I could almost say we're at war with an ethnic minority in Pakistan. These drone attacks may have undermined or, you know, decimated Al-Qaeda, the Arab leadership of it, but at the end of the day, we've made more enemies than we've removed. There's no question about it.
Robert, I was going to ask you, how serious do you consider these recent threats? Then we had the situation with, of course, the underwear bomber, as he was called, the car with the explosive found in Times Square. We had the cargo of explosive devices from Yemen recently. How actually genuinely serious are these kind of threats?
Oh, I think they're very serious. The explosive used, PETN, is easily concealable. You can put it in the sides of suitcases. You can put it in, like in the case of underwear. You can disguise it as toner in a toner cartridge, in all sorts of ways, and you can remotely detonate this. I think it's very lucky this was stopped. It was thanks to Saudi Arabia, who apparently has a source inside this group. So I think we're very lucky. There is simply no way to protect our transit cargoes now that go by air. You can't do it with the technology we have.
Okay, let me bring in Amitava Kumar here and ask you, with the discovery of those recent cargo plane explosive packaged devices, we've been pushed into another round of heightened security, and I wonder, above all, there is widespread suspicion. I wonder how real you believe the threat to be when you look at this, and how important is it to boost the security to the level we seem to be seeing now?
One of the things that immediately struck me was that the Times Square bomber, the so-called Times Square bomber, when he was brought in for his arraignment in here in New York City, he said to the judge, I'm 100 times guilty, because unless you stop the drone attacks, I will continue the fight. So one of the things that immediately strikes me is that these measures that have been put into place, these security measures, these are important, but are we addressing the popular perception and the fact out there that death is being meted out from the stratosphere to people who are innocent?
Actually, it's interesting you raised that.
There have been more.
Interesting you raised that. We've talked about that on this show as well, the fact that drone attacks are a source of controversy both for Pakistan and for the USA because of the sovereignty issue, and addressing it with the Pakistani government. Of course, they on one hand are accused of supplying information, and yet on the other hand of crying foul when the drone attacks take place. But I wonder, you know, I want to put an email to you we got on this issue of the suspect packages that came from a regular viewer by the name of Barnabas Mavuti. So, Amitava, if I can put this to you, it says, I suspect the bombs intercepted in Europe and Yemen recently did not belong to terrorists. Whoever caught them knew exactly where they were. And I wonder how you feel about that, you know, the conspiracy theories that occur from time to time in this case, that this kind of manipulation, this kind of planted device might help governments with an agenda of, you know, keeping this so-called war on terror going, give them some kind of reason to keep people on edge.
Sure. There are often reasons to suspect that even the arrests that are made have been in some ways already planned and anticipated by the government itself. I'm talking in, for example, in terms of Kashmir and India's own water terror, which mirrored President Bush's rhetoric. The arrest of one particular person, for example, was something that it was later on shown. This highly publicized arrest was something that the Indian government in Kashmir had already set into motion, and that is how this person, a gentleman called Afzal Guru, came to be arrested in New Delhi. Mm-hmm. So we should not be, I'm in partial agreement with the person who has written in, because although I do not know the facts of this particular investigation, I do understand that governments often, in some ways, plan these operations, including arrests, in order to precisely be like a fireman, you know, who lights the fire and then sets the alarm in order to show himself as the hero.
Okay, let me ask Robert Baird about this. You know, this idea that sometimes it benefits governments to strategically create incidents to be able to keep an agenda in place.
Well, I think it's not so much that, is that you blow incidents out of proportion, and there's been numerous arrests, especially under the Bush administration, of people who were just sitting around saying, "Oh, let's do something," you know, in somebody's name. And in fact, it was a true conspiracy. But what you do is you keep this drumbeat of fear going in the United States, and you can pull people around by the nose, frankly. Right. But you don't actually need a conspiracy. And I half agree. But remember, I was in the CIA. I used to try to do conspiracies. And the American government's not very good at it. But what we're facing here is an intellectual conspiracy, convincing the Americans that we're doing well in Afghanistan and that this war is winnable. That's where the conspiracy is.
All right, Robert, let me put an email to you, if I may, from the UAE, from the United Arab Emirates, a region you know well, of course. Fuad Akkad wrote in saying, "The invasion of two nations, killing innocent people, placing people in Guantanamo Bay without trial, and instilling a fear of Muslims, is this the human rights and civil liberties the U.S. always talks about?" And of course, people always ask, when does America wake up and realize that its foreign policies often are the reason it becomes a target, as you were suggesting at the beginning?
Well, I mean, it's a tragedy for the United States, because the United States, you know, is built on the myth of democracy and human rights and the Constitution. And people are so scared now, and they don't understand it, that they are shredding the Constitution. I mean, they're going after the press. They're going after Guantanamo. The whole idea that we ever waterboarded, which was torture, undermines our values. And I think Americans who think about it are very well aware of this. But you have this, again, this fear that has overwhelmed the country.
Okay. Avitava Kumar, is an email from Portugal from one of our viewers there by the name of Nela Netu Letsualu. In order to maintain a system that capitalizes on wars, governments use fear to control people's minds. And I wonder how long people are willing to live under this climate of fear, the so-called climate of fear, you know, and maintain this level of stress and reduce quality of life before there's some kind of backlash.
Yes. This fear, actually, if we are talking for a moment about Muslim communities in this city, this fear has been instigated by a system of surveillance and infiltration, where people, mostly failed businessmen, people involved in fraud, have been sent out as informants. So a Muslim person who is unemployed is sent out to the mosque, where he talks to impressionable youth or shows pictures of Abu Ghraib. And what Robert Baer just called a conspiracy, I would say, is a manufactured conspiracy, because this informant goes in and builds a certain environment where people enter into these highly unlikely scenarios where there'll be a bombing or they will, but you know, and these particularly unrealistic plots then get busted, and then these arrests are made. And that has led to a great fear and insecurity among the larger community here, because people then think, who can you trust?
Right.
And I think a backlash is visible there when people do not want to trust the government.
Now, Robert Baer, at the end of the Bush administration, the new administration dropped terms such as war on terror and tried to try and soften the image a little bit, but there was nothing really to replace the terminology in a way that reduced this kind of division in society, particularly the Islamophobia that exists. And I wonder, you know, when do the policies change to allow people to feel they are part of the solution rather than the core of the problem?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to look at it objectively. They are part. I mean, the only solution to this so-called war on terror, and I don't like that name, are the Muslims. It's when you have Islamic communities, like you saw, let's face it, in Saudi Arabia, turned against the Takfiris, the militants, and closed them down. I mean, Saudi Arabia is a great success story in the new king. And they did this on their own without American troops, without American advisors, without anybody. But the people were convinced. The problem is, a small groups in Yemen, and when I talk about small, I'm talking about 20, you know, it can cause wreak havoc if they were to bring an airplane down. And that's what scares me, is this fringe groups that can do damage, and the Americans will misunderstand it and overreact. I guarantee you of that.
All right, we're going to take a very short break here. When we return, more on the politics of terrorism, to what extent some countries, including the USA and India, are politicizing their national security threats. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Terrorist cells, elevated threat levels, and foiled attacks. There's no getting away from such sensational and often alarming stories in the global media about the dangers we face on a daily basis. But to what extent are such reports driven by a purely political agenda? Well, discussing those issues with me from New York are Robert Baer, who had a long career as a CIA operative and handled some of the toughest assignments in the Middle East, and Amitava Kumar, professor of English at the Vassar College here in the U.S. and author of numerous books on the subject of national security and civil rights. And Amitava Kumar, I want to put an email to you that came in from Canada, from a viewer by the name of Paste Berlusconi, who wrote in saying, as far as the U.S. is concerned, fear tends to foster Islamophobia and other irrational forms of discrimination. The approach to extremism needs to be re-evaluated. And I wonder to what degree it is harder to get cooperation for people in the fight against extremism when there is such broad sort of tarring of a community, the Muslim community in particular, and a lack of trust that you discussed earlier.
You know, I visited several mosques while I was writing my last book, and I saw the pictures of the orange jumpsuited figure in Guantanamo that all of us are familiar with, stuck on the wall sometimes. It was an incitement, because it was the prisoner in Guantanamo has become a symbol of widespread injustice. And it is actually what the US government doesn't realize often is that it is a recruiting tool for militants and jihadists. And one had hoped that the Obama administration would have been sensitive to this. And Obama indeed spoke of, during his election campaign, about this being torture being a dark and horrible episode in this nation's history. But it hasn't been overturned. In fact, he has gone ahead and signed more laws for better surveillance for all kinds of wiretapping, and also for extraordinary rendition. That has not been put a stop to.
Actually, Robert Baer, that's an interesting point. I mean, something you alluded to earlier on. Isn't the danger that Al-Qaeda is less of a threat as direct, as you say, sort of cells in particular, but more as an ideology now, that people latch onto this idea and that the culture of being anti-American and anti-Western is growing?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, it can't help but not grow when you're fighting two wars, a failed war in Iraq and a failed war in Afghanistan. And, you know, this is not to denigrate the American military, but it does use area weapons. And when you use area weapons, you kill women and children. You know, these wars have dragged on longer than World War II, longest wars in American history. There's no clear-cut victory standards, and Dr. Kumar is absolutely right. And you have this administration, which has been an utter failure in repealing the mistakes of the Bush administration. Guantanamo, renditions, Dr. Kumar is absolutely correct. You cannot carry on like this and not expect somebody, a small cell, not even a cell, but a couple people, setting off a car bomb. It's just going to happen.
Let me ask you then, Robert, where is the limit? In your opinion, obviously there's a balance that has to be struck between the need to preserve national security and create a safe environment for the community, and yet the balance has to come with the erosion of civil or avoiding eroding civil liberties. Where is that balance? What is allowed and what isn't, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it's how we exert our surveillance capabilities. If you randomly go into mosques or you randomly profile for no good reason, This is when you alienate people. If it's done intelligently, surveillance with good sources and the rest of it, you're focusing on a very small part of the population, activists. But if you just take a large chunk of the population and single them out, you really are going to create problems.
I want to pass on to Dr. Kumar, actually, the idea that it's, you know, erosion of civil liberties has come with an overall erosion in the quality of life for people living in places like America.
You know, Riz, the 9/11 Commission report makes a claim, which is that we need to exercise our imagination. It says we need to even bureaucratize or routinize our imagination. Well, there has been no exercise of imagination. What you see are very mechanical processes, rather formulaic processes of conducting surveillance. The idea of how a young man turns into a militant, let's say in a borough of New York City, is a very mechanical, mechanized understanding. There is no imagination there. So what I'm trying to suggest to you is that a proper perception of how messy and complex lives are, and therefore how to intelligently track something and then reach conclusions that do not seem authoritarian or ham-fisted, would be a wonderful approach to take.
Well, let me ask you then, Dr. Kumar, to what degree is the situation complicated by the change in the profile of those who adopt extremist tactics now? I mean, the fact that there may be an ideology in place, of course, means that the profile of those getting involved has changed as well.
Indeed. There has to be a certain vigilance. But that vigilance should not appear to be something that is only focused on one set of people. I always tell people that you see the sign in restaurants, employees must wash their hands. But shouldn't everyone wash their hands? And how are you going to enforce that law? And how are you going to make sure that everyone stays alert and about and it is not something that is considered particular only to form Muslims, for example, Muslim citizens in the U.S. who should be doing so.
Let me bring up something, Robert, with you. The fact that your character, I mean, your personality was sort of portrayed in the movie Syriana, and George Clooney, his CIA agent, was based on you. The idea that field operations take place that way, and perhaps the kind of image it portrays to the world of how America operates out in the field, how the USA conducts its operations, I wonder to what degree it doesn't help the kind of thing, you know, that the intelligence agency is trying to do.
Oh, it doesn't help at all. I mean, you know, people have this view, the CIA and the FBI have, you know, ninjas in black costumes and they can spring out of ceilings and take care of problems and at the last minute fight a terrorist on the airplane. And that's the whole problem. If people in this country would read more and think more about what they're doing and how they're fighting this, well, one, we wouldn't be in Afghanistan now, and two, we wouldn't have invaded Iraq, which we have to really reduce the problem to that. Two unnecessary wars that don't need to be fought. And that is just really added to it. It's, you know, they were just dumb wars. You just have to face it.
And yet,
and there's other.
Well, I was going to say, Robert, ahead, the irony is that the as you say, you like many people, you don't like the term war on terror, but that was so readily adopted by so many other countries during the time of the Bush administration as an excuse for many of those countries to take action against insurgents in their nation or to oppress people, to cut down opposition. It was almost a mantra for any nation wanting to do something.
It was a political choice after Oklahoma City when the truck bombing of the Federal Center by essentially what's the Aryan Brotherhood, the white supremacists. The United States government didn't have a war on white supremacists or white radicals or the rest of it. It just took care of the militants and put them in jail if they had guns and explosives. And it was sort of done with. And we got over that. But the Bush administration rescuing itself in a sense by going with the war on terror and the systemic dishonesty of American newspapers and the editorial pages and the White House just added up into this froth of idiocy.
Now, Abhidharma Kumar, there was also the view that in India there's been a similar thing. This kind of, you know, fear-mongering has also grown and the communities or the populations being divided because of a similar kind of fear.
Yes, the Indian leaders were very eager to bring into force a law which was called the Prevention of Terrorism Act that in a very servile manner echoed all the rhetoric of the Bush administration. And it was used primarily against the people in Kashmir who were demanding a certain freedom from the military occupation. And it was used to jail minorities, mostly Muslims. So, but you know, it is not only a question of dissidents, as you mentioned a little while ago. It is in the case of Robert Mugabe, for example, he called journalists illegal combatants, unlawful combatants. So we have been around the world, for some reason, we have been very eager to embrace the American rhetoric. And it has brought catastrophic results.
Robert Baer, just a last thought. We've got about a minute left. Just do you see things improving? Considering you've watched the whole picture unfold, do you see things getting better?
You know, I'm a pessimist, so you have to sort of pay attention to that. But look, when the intelligence budget of the United States is $80 billion, has gone up $50 billion since 9/11, it's the terrorism industrial complex. There are generals. It's nobody's fault in particular, but it's the system is built in to keep this threat going. There is terrorism out there, and it needs to be stopped. But this huge effort is self-sustaining, and I hate to say it, people are making money off of it.
All right. Well, Robert Baer and Abhi Dhamakumar.
Including myself, but you
know. well, I wish you luck.
Well, I mean, I write books. I'm sorry. Let's be upfront about it.
That's fair enough. But I mean, thank you both for discussing this topic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us too. Now remember, you can follow the show on Facebook and see what we're up to there. You can give us feedback on topics and post your questions and comments. On the next show, it's being called A Circle of Democracy Around China. Renewed alliances between the US and nations neighboring the world's most populous nation are becoming more vital than ever as Beijing's assertiveness in the region rises. Be sure to tune in for that. From me and the team, we'll see you next time.